9:11 now. Good morning. It's John Williams. Nice to have you here. I'm here weekdays from 9 to noon on social media, WGN King John. Man reports coyote bit him in the buttocks on Gold Coast sidewalk. Second attack within a day, says the Tribune. You've been hearing about that. Steve's been reporting on that to you here on WGN Radio. And Bob talked about it very early this morning. It's not exactly Chance the Snapper when the city fell in love with a creature in the wild, but because this is just a little more dangerous and maybe painful. Chance didn't snap anybody. This coyote has evidently bitten a couple people.
And it looks injured. I have to tell you this. I've seen video now of the sighting yesterday in the Gold Coast.
Oh, and I have
then
not.
The one today that came up to the photographer. Both of them look like it could be the same coyote with an injured front leg.
Huh. So maybe he feels
around.
Threatened, and these people, he feels like he's got to lash out to protect himself.
Perhaps. Maybe he's hungry, can't run to catch prey. Something like that's going on, maybe.
Maybe it's a fight or flight thing, but yeah. Maybe it's also rabid. I mean, did you guys talk about that this morning? That's my first concern. And I did not see in the Trib, nor did I hear you say, Steve, that they got rabies shots.
Yeah, I would imagine that's something that would happen. Both of them probably will have to have that. And those used to be very, very painful. I don't think they are anymore, but it is a series of shots. The coyote that came up to the Channel 9 camera this morning didn't look like it was foaming at the mouth, but it was acting aggressively, like it was growling, and it looked like it was, you know, posturing itself. And again, coyotes normally run the other way from humans. They don't come that close, especially in an urban setting. So it'll be interesting to see what's going on with that coyote.
He looked like he was trying to get in the garbage can, but he couldn't quite reach over the garbage can. You know how they have the grates over the top of the garbage cans? And I don't think he could quite get in there to get some food.
When you see a fox and you hear about a coyote or, I don't know, just any kind of wildlife living in the city, I just feel bad for those animals. Foxes should be not in Cook County, or certainly not in the city, not in the Gold Coast, right? The only foxes on the Gold Coast should be on women's jackets and men's fur-lined coats. The wild ones, I just feel so bad for the animals.
And how did he get here? Like,
that's the thing. They live here.
Yeah. I saw one report this morning, John, that maybe the 4,000 to 5,000 coyotes that live in the Chicago area.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they vote?
No, but some of them are collared because, you know, the folks up at the Lincoln Park Zoo that are affiliated with Lincoln Park Zoo have had a study ongoing about coyotes in the city. And I know some of them have collars on, but there are quite a few of them. And, you know, most people never see a coyote. I know there have been sightings where people see them in their yards or whatever. But most of the time they come out at night when nobody's around and they keep themselves hidden.
What's the matter, Carm? You have the most perplexed look on your face.
I don't know. I've lived here my whole life. I just have never. I never thought I was going to see a coyote walking down Michigan Avenue. Now you guys are telling me that they're just living here. They're hanging out.
Well, if you just go a little further out in the collar suburbs, like, you know, I lived in LaGrange Park for a long time. You'd see deer in people's backyards, and that's on this side of 294.
That part I get. Nice. Listen, you go out to good old Crystal Lake. I expect to see coyotes and deers, and go out to the North Burbs. Sure, great. Whatever suburb you just named, just
deer. By the way,
yeah,
keep going.
Yeah, well, okay, but like Michigan Avenue, dude's coming for us.
I know.
Going to Starbucks. That's
I know. I'm just like, oh, you little creature, you're in the wrong place. You shouldn't be here. You want to just grab him and send him to Crystal Lake. By the way, Jeopardy Round 2 continued last night. Now, Andy had watched it yesterday from the sports department. Are you watching the primetime special Jeopardy this week?
You know, I've missed it, John, and I feel bad about it, actually. It seems like great entertainment, so I got to catch up.
It is, and it's
fun.
It
is, and it isn't.
Exactly. And Mary, go ahead and explain that.
Because you're looking forward to it. You want to see how smart they are, but then you feel so stupid afterwards. You're just like, I fast forwarded to the end in the second game.
There was a piece
because
on Slate.
I was so mad.
There's a piece in Slate yesterday, and it would apply probably today too. And they said, this really doesn't feel like Jeopardy. How entertaining is it to watch three IBM computers click and get correct answers? The drama is a little lost. They said it would be as if Michael Jordan, LeBron James, and Kobe Bryant were all playing on the same team, and each time they came down and hit a three. And that's great, but there's no chance anybody's going to miss. They do miss a few, but I get that point.
It's almost that you like cheer when they miss one.
Or you go, I know, literally, I was watching with my son, and he went, whoa, Not that we even understood the question, but the guy didn't get the answer right, and we almost couldn't believe it.
It woke you up anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I was thinking, well, what would categories be that I would be able to do well in? Because I'm not, I don't even understand their categories. I came up with my fantasy five categories. Ding. Things found on a Portillo's menu. I would know that. I would be good at that.
What is a pickle?
This chopped salad. Chicken! Places I've left my keys.
Excellent.
Butler, you don't remember that.
Actually, Mary, now that you mention it, I think I would do poorly in that category. That's why they're missing. Butler basketball. That's the one team near and dear to my heart. Things a wiener dog will eat. We've had wiener dogs forever, and I know about the unusual personalities of dachshunds. And finally, bad gifts I got for Brenda. So these would be five things that I go, I could own that. I would go right to 2,000, please. I would skip to the high money.
John, I'm in your boat. It would be a very narrow thing for me.
Well, we do have some of the questions and answers from Jeopardy last night. We've cut them out of the show. We'll play you, as they do on the show, the answer, and let's see if you can get the question. We'll do that after 9:30. We had some fun with this yesterday, and we all felt really dumb, but actually a little smart, too. I suspect you would agree with me on this, Mary, that there were some questions last night that you and I knew the answer to. You thought, oh, you've got to be kidding me. They're asking about Elizabethan literature or decades.
Like, or you can at least guess on some of them.
And some of them I actually knew. And when I do know the answer to one of them, I think, this is way too easy. If I know it, it's got no business being on this show.
Then I think it's a trick question.
Right.
When
right.
I get it right.
If I know the answer to this, something is up. The News Click, our daily web poll question, asked you, if I were Prince Harry or Meghan Markle, I would. And we gave you three options. You would stay fully vested in the royal family, you would back away from the royal family, or you would dropkick the whole thing and move to Chicago. You had those three options. 73% of you said you would downsize your involvement in the royal family, which is what they're sort of doing. It's sending shockwaves through the UK, and royal watchers around the world are in on this. I'm not a big royal watcher, but I understand people's fascination with them. And Hannah Stanley, who co-hosts Gabby Road with Hannah, Fred, and Justin, Hannah's terrific on this topic. She's going to join us later in the 11 o'clock hour to talk a little bit about what's happened. To me, the big question is, what about the money, right? If you, in the way they made it sound, they want to strike out on their own. You know, you're going to... I'm not exactly sure if they really know what that means, because it's tough out there. I'm sure they could find great paying jobs, but I'm just saying, if you had the cash cow that the royal family is, would you walk away from that?
Yeah, and I don't really believe they're going to strike out on their own. When I see them taking up a shift at Starbucks or something, then I'll believe that they're really going for the old strikeout on your own move.
Well, maybe it's like a Trump getting into the real estate business. Actually, you will always have that momentum from the family name, the family fortune. So it's not the same as the rest of us striking out on our own.
That will she go back to acting, I wonder?
Yeah, right. I mean, if you guys are really, if you want the courage of your convictions, then go ahead and make a living as an actress, and we'll see how that goes for you. Okay, Al, if we got just a couple of minutes here. Walter Jacobson's perspective is right around the corner. He is ranting this week about the harsh treatment that the Bears organization has received this season and after the season ended. Walter's perspective on that right around the corner. Our News Click yesterday, in fact, asked you if you think the Bears should acquire Tom Brady. What's your answer to that, sports fella?
That would be a hell's yes.
And would he have any interest in coming to Chicago?
That would be most definitely no. I wouldn't think. It's not the worst option for him, but I don't think he's coming here.
A couple of you texted in and said things like this. John, Tom Brady is a cheater. I'm not interested. And 773 said, we don't need no pretty boy fancy pants around here. He doesn't look like a Bear. He doesn't look like a Grabowski.
That's good.
Right. Because the Bears look like guys sitting on their sofa watching TV right now. So maybe we need to reimagine what a Chicago Bear looks like. And the one we are imagining is one still wearing a helmet and a jockstrap.
We don't need another Bear to look like Mike Tomczak, Doug Flutie, and or whoever... Jay Cutler quarter. He does actually look like Jay Cutler in a little bit of a way.
The prototypical Bears quarterback to me would be, I don't know, somebody who represents the city, represents quarterbackdom.
Jim Miller, does that work for you? Like a gritty, grimy, slightly out of shape?
What about Jim McMahon?
The greatest in his heyday.
You know, he was the greatest Bears quarterback that anybody living knows or remembers, but he was not a great quarterback. Didn't have a fantastic skill set.
When he was super young, before that shoulder started taking a bunch of pounding, he had it all. If you talk to like Kaz about it, he'll say that McMahon in college at BYU, when he played with him, was better than Steve Young, who's in the Hall of Fame. And all
no
stuff.
Kidding, really.
But then he got hurt, and that's the guy that everyone really saw.
What McMahon did for us, this is my recollection, wasn't raw talent. It was just determination and his personality.
Yep.
That and that makes up for a lot in this world, doesn't it? What are you looking at?
Just for the record, Steve Alexander is correct. It was in the aughts, April 4th, 2007. The Coyote visited the Quiznos.
It's in the loop, right?
Yes, you're correct.
I want to go to some of the Jeopardy questions and answers from last night's show. By the way, somebody said, John, they had a special last week with Alex Trebek. And they were telling us that they do have questions that the rest of us mortal human beings can answer to keep us interested. Otherwise, we would turn it off because we'd be bored, which is what Mary did. Mary Vandeveld in traffic just fast-forwarded through it because it was
I taped it early and then I watched it later just till the
end. I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I just wanted to see who won.
Okay, let's try a couple of them. Maybe we should break first, right, Producer Elif? Do we need to, we can keep going here? Okay, well, let's start with question one. The category is college football.
Football four.
Before starring on a four-letter TV drama, Mark Harmon starred for this four-letter school as a quarterback, averaging 7.2 yards a carry in 1973.
I got this one.
I knew the answer to that one.
Think about it. My husband goes, of course you got it, because there's hardly any other schools with four letters.
Maybe that helps.
Well,
I just remember when he came on the scene, he was a good-looking actor on a hot show, and dang, he was a college quarterback. And I thought, what a charmed life he has.
Yeah, I knew it had to be California.
Strong name. Liked the name a lot.
Here's your answer.
Brad. What is UCLA? That's it.
UCLA. All right, let's. There was a category called Stupid Answers. Stupid Answers. Here's Q2, Elif.
Lucy was quite fond of deriding Charlie Brown with this nine-letter term for a less-than-intelligent person.
What did Lucy call Charlie Brown all the time? You...
Stupid face?
Nope. Mary, did you know that one?
I forgot it, and now I'm forgetting it again. Blockhead.
Blockhead. Yes. What is blockhead?
Yeah.
Sorry, I gave it away.
Same category. This is number three. You got
Archie
it,
Archie Bunker called Edith this, also an ornamental typographical character.
So I remember that one. Archie Bunker called Edith this. Carm's making a squishy face. Mary probably knew that one, right? I think this is just one of those things for the rest of us.
James.
What is dingbat?
Yep. Dingbat.
Stifle, dingbat.
Stifle. Stifle, dingbat.
Yeah, I had stifle in my head, too.
You know, that's not very...
And meathead.
That's not a... I don't know that that travels well. I mean, it was all in the family. It was a different time. It was a different family. But calling your wife dingbat all of the time doesn't play well these days, does it? Let's try another one. Stupid answers. This is Q4, Elif.
It was also called a fool's cap.
See, this is the thing. I thought, oh, come on. We're wasting time here. I know the answer to that one.
I thought it was a trick question.
I know. I thought, oh, cut it out. All right, here's the answer to that one.
James.
What's a dunce cap?
Dunce cap. We all know that. Let's do one more, and then we'll break for the forecast, the sports headlines, and some traffic for you. This would be Q5, Elif, and the category is college football.
In 2004, an NCAA award was established in the name of this center on the 1933 Michigan team and future politician.
So I only know of one Michigan center in my life on a football team and who became a politician. I mean, that one, to me, not bragging here, but I think most folks knew the answer to that, right? Right?
You got me, John. I'm slow, apparently, today.
Well, I guess I could be on the all-time greatest Jeopardy champion.
Puff out that chest.
A little bit. Here's your answer.
James.
It was Gerald Ford.
Gerald Ford. President Ford played college football.
That was one of the ones I thought, I think I know what I think. You know, I don't want to say it because I'd be embarrassed if I was wrong.
Right.
Then, of course, when you're right, you go, yeah, I knew that.
I knew that. I should have said it. We have found on trivia nights and things like that that Brent and I will attend that one of us will whisper, oh, I think it's Gerald Ford, but I don't want to say because I don't want to be so wrong and everybody goes, oh, you idiot. So we tend to stifle our inspiration. Let this be a lesson to us all. Take that chance. Boldly step where your brain is telling you at the Lincoln Park Zoo. Hey, Seth, it's John Williams. You're on WGN in Chicago. Thanks for taking our call. How are you?
Sure thing. Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Two things, and then I'll let you go. But one was a colleague of mine just stepped into the studio here and said the idea that you see a coyote or even a fox in Chicago is not that unusual. People that live on the southwest side of the city, the north side of the city, say they see these things all the time. Would you agree with that, that this isn't unusual?
Seeing them is not unusual at all, no. And we've been tracking a number of these different species for many years now, and there's way more diversity, way more wildlife all around the city than most people realize.
If one is biting people, and maybe one has been, what does that tell you?
Yeah, well, it tells me that, you know, these events, we know these events are very rare. These kinds of attacks, they happen, obviously, but they're extremely rare, especially when you think about the number of these animals that live around us. But when they happen, they tend to happen at around this time of year, when animals are sort of desperate for food, they're ranging more widely than they usually would. So what it tells me is that people should be a little bit cautious about the wildlife in your neighborhood, but also we all need to remain aware that these events are very rare, and most of these species really are very harmless to us.
Can you talk about the population of coyotes? And because it seems to me, we were talking about this here in the newsroom.
This would be the colleague I was referring to.
I have coyotes in my backyard all the time.
Yeah.
It's not unusual to see them at all. I live in the suburbs.
I live by Wrigley Field. I haven't seen a coyote in years. I mean, it strikes me as very unusual, but Bertrand insists that it's pretty common.
My point was the coyotes have moved back. I don't know if they've moved here for the first time or if they've moved back, right? But, I mean, 20 years ago, I certainly didn't have coyotes. The population has sort of moved into the area in the past 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, this is an interesting ongoing debate in the scientific community. It's sort of, were they always here and we kind of stopped noticing, or have they moved back in? And I think the reality is probably somewhere in between. I doubt there were really ever zero coyotes in this area, but it certainly seems like they are on the upswing in the last few decades, and our data do bear that out.
Does this mean maybe this one is rabid if it's biting people, attacking people?
Well, it's very rare for a coyote to get rabies, but it is possible. So that is one potential explanation. It's also just the case that when you have, you know, the best estimate is that there's maybe 3,000 coyotes in Cook County. When you have that many, at some point, some of them may find themselves in a desperate situation and may start behaving in ways that aren't usual. Another potential explanation is someone may have been feeding that animal. Sometimes when people hand feed these animals, they come to associate humans and food, and that can lead to attacks. I don't know the exact story behind this one individual animal, but obviously it's very problematic, and when these attacks happen, it's something of concern.
They're so pretty, but some people, a colleague of mine, doesn't like the looks of the things, doesn't appreciate the sweet faces that they trot about with. I mean, and you know what happens then? Your heart goes out to them, and you're inclined to feed them. You want to shelter them. What do you make of the people that reach out to these coyotes and feed them?
Oh, it's just never, never a good idea. As I said, you know, behaviorally, that will lead them to associate people and food. They will start approaching people, and that can lead to attacks. But as you mentioned when you talked about rabies, some of these animals do also carry diseases, not just rabies, but other diseases as well. And so getting close enough to them to feed them by hand, it's not only bad for them, but it could be bad for you. So just in the strongest possible terms, I urge people, please do not feed the coyotes.
If I'm walking my dog along the street or the canal and I see a coyote, what should I do?
Well, I would be careful. I've definitely heard from people who do things like let their dogs off the leash to play with the coyotes. This is a very bad idea because these coyotes sometimes can be aggressive, especially towards small dogs. So if I'm walking a dog and I see a coyote, I'm going to keep that dog on leash as close to me as I can. 99% of the time, that's going to be just fine. That coyote is going to walk away or is going to go somewhere else. But I think those are really the only real precautions most of the time you should need to take.
I could proceed in the same direction, though. I don't have to turn and run, do I?
I don't think so. Now, if the animal is approaching you, that's very unusual for a coyote to actively approach people. If that is happening, there are some things you can do. Some people suggest hazing them, so yell at them. If you have something you can throw at them, sometimes those sorts of behaviors will help teach the coyotes that, okay, people are not good to walk up to. I want to stay away from them.
I hazed one. I said, hey, I don't think your coat looks real. And then his feelings were hurt, and he called a counselor. Okay, well, so we are out of time, but I think that's very helpful advice, Seth. We may reach out to you again, but thanks for keeping us posted.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Seth Magel is the director of Urban Wildlife Institute at the Lincoln Park Zoo. So, hopefully that was helpful.
I feel more comfortable. I'm going to throw my WGN headband that Marlene Wells gave at me. If I see a coyote walking up me on Michigan, it's going to walk away from me. Throw things at them?
Don't throw that. Those are lovely little keepsakes that we got the other day.
I don't have a baseball walking around with me. Maybe I should carry one.
9:54. I think I have time for maybe one more question and one more answer, but I need Elif's attention over there, and I don't know that she's listening to WGN Radio right now. Hey, Elif, can you play? Okay, good. This is question six, right? The category is art from the Tournament of Champions last night.
Van Gogh drew a famous portrait of this homeopathic physician, whom he called sicker than I am. Cezanne, also a friend, chose to paint a scene of his house at Auvers.
Carmel, I'll let you go ahead and take that one.
That's John Paxson.
Who is Scottie Pippen? I'll just start throwing out names of people I know, and maybe one of them will hit.
I don't even know what they're asking. For that house or the person?
All the ones I played up to that point, Mary, were ones that you and I might reasonably take a guess at. We know UCLA. We know Gerald Ford.
Right.
And then there's one of those questions you go, I don't even know what those words were. I have no idea where you are. It's art, right? They all buzz at the same time. Here's the answer.
James. Was Dr. Gachet?
Yes. Dr. Gachet, of course.
Come on.
He was a backup to Mark, some quarterback.
Related to Dr. Zhivago.
Definitely a Bears quarterback in the 90s.
It's 9:55. This is WGN. By the way, I'll ask the assembled jury how you would rule on this. Jeopardy is famous in some ways for their being very particular about the answers. And if you get the right answer but don't get it quick enough or right enough, then it's wrong. This is an example from last night's Tournament of Champions.
2011.
Any letter words for 2000?
This adverb means in a manner not typical of a particular person.
Okay, there's the question. It's a 20-letter word. Play it one more time, the clue here, Elif. Play the thing you just played for us.
2011.
Any letter words for 2000?
This adverb means in a manner not typical of a particular person.
Okay, maybe you know what the answer is. Maybe you're thinking, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You got a word in your head? Is it 20 letters? So here's the answer.
Brad, what is uncharacteristic? No. Lee?
Ken? Mm. What is uncharacteristically?
Yes, I ruled against you before you completed it, Brad. Sorry.
But you lose.
I would have uncharacteristic. I think most folks know adverbs end in Y or L-Y, so he would have gotten Lee. He was that pause indicated to him that he wasn't wrong, but he wasn't right yet. And Alex could have waited a beat. He would have dropped the Lee in. But then Ken Jennings is like, I think I learned this, I think, in utero. He knows that one. So then Jennings just says what the guy just said. I'm always more generous than I think the host on these things is supposed to be. I would have paused and let him finish the answer. But uncharacteristically was the answer. We have more of these. We'll sprinkle in the show later on. But so this fad, I don't know if it's a fad. I don't know if it's good advice or bad advice. But intermittent fasting is something a lot of people are doing now that the calendar has turned. What are they doing? Is it a good idea? By the way, a lot of you still asking questions or making comments about the coyote on the loose in Chicago. The coyote. There's thousands of them that live in the city and even more in the county. The densest population of those animals in an urban area in America is in Chicago, some of you have reminded me. We had a guest on a moment ago from Lincoln Park who was talking a little bit about this population and what may be happening with these couple of bites in the city. Some of us who live in the city think it's unusual. Those of us that live in the city but maybe a little more outlying see them all the time. Our friend Pete McMurray, who you hear all the time. Pete sent me a picture of a coyote in his backyard or walking down the street or whatever.
People won't approve of this, and I understand that, but I know of a farmer who would sit on his porch and shoot them as they went by. And I had 100 one year.
Are you kidding me?
No. And this is in an area where I grew up where we did not have a coyote when I was a kid.
Well, maybe he's protecting his sheep, livestock, his dogs, his kids, his property, whatever. Some of you sent me notes. You said you hunt him in Plainfield. My brother-in-law, we're talking Grundy County now, used to do trapping and hunting like that, but that was not downtown Chicago.
But it's just funny how we react. I mean, earlier this week, there was a gooey story, a touchy-feely about, you know, the coyote pulled from the lake in Monroe Harbor.
Isn't that a sweet thing?
On a stretcher. And, well, we wouldn't do it for a rabbit. Right?
I don't know that we wouldn't.
Really, if you think someone saw a rabbit drowning in the lake, that the fire department would respond and pull it out? I don't think so.
Steve, there's a hierarchy of human affection.
Well, that's what I'm wondering. Yeah, I guess
that's what we do.
Yeah.
If you're a snake, I'm sorry, ain't nobody coming for you. Rabbit, maybe. Coyote, fox, yeah. You know, and then as you work with wolf, of course we would save a wolf. It's a wolf. Well, look at the wolf.
Wolves are endangered.
You'll save the wolf and then he will eat you. But still, that's what we do. For instance, we have no trouble eating pork and beef, but we fall in love with deer.
No, worse than that, we don't eat horse. It's illegal to eat a horse.
Think about that. I mean, that doesn't make any sense,
no,
does
it? No, it doesn't. It makes
They're
no
beautiful
sense.
Animals, and that's all you need to know.
But coyotes are pests.
Somebody said, John, do coyotes eat rats? Because if they do, Chicago needs them. John, because of the coyote, when I walk my dog at night, I keep a miniature air horn with me, the type that you would hear at an outdoor sporting event. Somebody else said, John, the coyote might be eating rats. Isn't that a good thing? We called our guest back a moment ago during the news and asked him, do coyotes eat rats? He said, yes, they do, but they don't eat enough. For instance, they eat rabbits, they eat other things. They don't eat enough that having coyotes is a good way to mitigate the city's rat problem.
You know, we didn't have time, but I talked to a guest 20 years ago when I had a Saturday show. He would come on and talk wildlife from time to time. And this notion that we're pushing animals out.
Yeah.
And back then he said the raccoon population in the Chicago area and in Illinois is bigger than it has ever been. It's not that we're building more parking lots and there's not room for these animals. It's that they've got more access to food and there actually are more of them than ever.
But the animals don't know that. They're just animals. They're
no, I'm
just
not
like,
blaming the animals.
Hey, there's a sandwich.
I'm just saying let's not say that the humans are pushing them out and that's why we see them in residential areas. I think their populations are bigger than ever.
Still, doesn't your heart go out to even a raccoon family when you see them crossing the street? Maybe not. I'll interpret that pause with a no.
Lee. Well, what do you mean heart goes out? I think it's pretty cool to see them. I enjoy seeing them. I don't want them living under my shed.
You ever opened up your garbage can and one of them said, hi, how are you?
I would not like that.
That happened to me. And I said, Brenda, there's a raccoon in our garbage can. Here's my plan. She goes, no. I don't know whatever your strategy is.
We used to have a possum lived under our shed, and Sharon brought Noah in the shed one time because she couldn't believe it. You could hear the possum snoring through the floor.
Rich, you wanted to say what? You're on WGN Radio. Good morning, Rich.
Oh, this popped into my head when he was talking about the farmer in Plainfield that shoots coyotes.
Yeah.
And mind you, I'm not condoning what I'm about to say, but about 100 years ago, Thompson was having trouble selling its machine gun for law enforcement and military. And this is when you could buy a machine gun as easily as buying any other firearm. You could probably Google something like Thompson Farmer Machine Gun. You'll find it. They showed an ad. Farmers, protect your livestock. Protect your investment. And you see a guy dressed as a farmer on the porch of a ranch house machine gunning coyotes and wolves with a Thompson machine gun.
Wow.
And then underneath, again, to show how times were then, check your money order to this address and they will just send you a machine gun in the mail. But yeah, that Thompson actually tried selling it to farmers as, hey, this is a way to protect your land against wild animals.
Isn't it funny now? Because when that argument comes up about machine guns or semi-automatic weapons, they always say, well, you don't use these to hunt. I guess once upon a time we did, huh?
Well, yes, now it is. Even if you legally own a machine gun, it is, yes, illegal to use them to hunt with.
Plus,
you can't only carry 5 rounds to hunt. But, yeah, back then it was, go at it.
Send us
a
check.
And it just blows my mind that they advertise.
I can see the Amazon Prime guy delivering machine guns to everybody in my neighborhood.
He'd really run back to his truck after he dropped off.
Not a good idea. That's a fascinating call. Hey, thanks for joining us, Rich. I appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, have a good day. It's 1013 WGN. John, if the coyotes are moving back to the city, maybe they're not bothered by the high taxes like the rest of us are. That explains the difference. Yeah, I don't understand it either. Brian, you're on WGN Radio. What can we do for you, Brian? You're on the air.
Some years ago, I was living in a house in Woodridge. We used to have garbage cans at the side of our house that I didn't have really secured exactly. Woke up one morning, and a coyote had knocked over one of the garbage cans and was sitting on one of our patio chairs eating a chicken leg with a box of KFC on his lap.
I can just see it. God bless him. You know, more power to you, Mr. Coyote, if you can figure that out.
On top of that, we had a flat roof above our front door, and there was a little fault in the roof. So the raccoons crawled into there, and they were living in our roof for a while.
Yeah.
So that was not fun.
Yeah, you don't want that. Hey, thanks for the phone call.
But kind of shocked to get up and look out on my patio and see a raccoon sitting in a patio chair eating chicken.
Bucket of KFC. Thanks for the call. It's 10:14. By the way, we were talking about Jeopardy and the Tournament of Champions. We will this week as we follow James Holzhauer and then the other two guys. Brad Rutter is the guy who won 20 years ago, isn't doing so well. They've split so far. Holzhauer won last night, and then Jennings won the night before. It's the best of seven, so they've got to win three. So Holzhauer's won one. If he wins tonight, tomorrow night, then it's over. But it could go much longer than that because it's a best of seven. There's three of them playing, and the score is 1-1-0. After 10:30, somebody from Northwestern's joining us. We'll talk a little bit about the fad that I'm hearing about, and that is, what do they call it? Intermittent fasting. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you got to do that.
I do not. You know, I didn't do the paleo thing. A friend of mine, I went to see him in Minnesota, and he was eating like 12 pounds of ground beef in the morning, and then he wouldn't eat for the rest of the day.
So that's intermittent paleo.
Yes, exactly. He would eat a ton of beef or meat like our forefathers did. I guess that's the species that we are, and they used to do that. So they would eat a bunch of meat and then be sated for the day and not eat and didn't have any snacks, no cookies, no cupcakes, no nothing. You know, when we were cavemen. And so for some reason, now we should eat that way, too. And he was doing that. Now they say you should only, like Pete McMurray was telling me, he doesn't eat anything after 8 p.m.
Do you take all his calls?
He's in my pocket a lot. And by that, I mean I have my phone in my pocket and he vibrates it. So, but then the other version I heard was, no, it's a six-hour window. And I was thinking, when would I eat if it was a six-hour window? 10 in the morning, have breakfast, and have my last bite at 4 in the afternoon?
Well, I'd have to be before 4 because the 6 hours ends at 4. So, yeah, 3:58 to 4.
I know. I'd be wolfing down my spaghetti.
An easy one is to just not eat past 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah, well, I'll get that. That makes sense to me. Some people have dialed it back to 8 p.m. 10 p.m. makes sense.
10 p.m. is easy for me. I'd have to eat in my sleep.
Not me, though. But I'm sitting there, and the refrigerator's right there. The TV's right here.
When do you go to bed, John?
I've been staying up kind of late lately, watching movies and rewatching games and stuff. And then you get up in the morning, you go, hey, let's have some food. So I'm probably eating too much. I don't know. But anyway, we'll talk about this a little after 10:30 here on WGN Radio. Although, just one last note on along these lines, if you will. You know how yesterday we were talking about the 10,000 steps? That's what you need to do. Forget how much you're going to eat. Just walk it off, right? A lot of you were telling us what your schemes were to get your 10,000 steps, including if you're on an exercise bicycle, if you're on a stationary cycle, then you put it on your sock, your Fitbit, and then it records the steps that way. A lot of you are just cheating with the thing to try and gin the number up, but at least when you get to 8, 9, 10,000, you feel better about it.
I don't think it really measures that way anymore, does it?
I'm surprised to hear that some of these things exist because I didn't think it would.
Right. I think it measures distance or movement. Not our movement.
But that's amazing that it would be that sensitive, right? Like if I walk from here across the street, it knows that?
I told you that I looked it up, that it measures, tells you how many flights you walk, and that it does measure stairs by barometric pressure.
So when you go up, it knows how far you've gone up because the barometric pressure is lower.
Or I don't know what, at a higher, lower, I don't know. But yeah, it's changed.
Wow. That's just crazy. There was this study from Harvard that we were talking about yesterday, and they said things like women who walk 4,400 steps had a lower mortality rate than those who were the least active and walked only 2,000 steps. In fact, they say there are no known benefits for women who walk more than 7,500. The only reason we've been told to walk 10,000 is because It was a marketing gimmick for a company that made pedometers. So then I reached into my Bill Bryson book, Steve, The Body, because I knew he had some wisdom about this. He says in his book that's a bestseller right now, you will in your lifetime walk 200 million steps. And then he talks about how challenging even that, though, is for senior citizens. If you break a hip, it's really hard for you to go on. Listen to this. About 40% of people over the age of 75, 40% of the people over the age of 75 who break their hips are no longer able to care for themselves. 10% die within 30 days, and nearly 30% die within 12 months. A broken hip, you've heard, you know, if that person's very old, really changes their life, maybe changes the length of their life. 3/4 of men and 1/2 of women who don't break any bones at all in old age, and 3/4 of all people go through their whole life without any serious problems with their knees. So it's not all bad news. 3/4 of men and 1/2 of women don't break any bones at all in old age. So the greatest probability is you won't break any bone at all. And some of us don't have any problems with our joints. I want to meet those people. He says this, too, by the way. Turn the page to 176. Stand by. This is about how much we should walk. There it is. This is kind of cool. We are not the speediest of creatures, as anyone who has ever chased a dog or cat or even an escaped hamster will know. The very fastest humans can run about 20 miles an hour, though only for very short bursts. But put us up against an antelope or a wildebeest on a hot day and allow us to trot after it, and we can run it to the ground. We perspire to keep cool, but quadruped mammals lose heat by respiration, by panting. If they can't stop to collect themselves, they overheat and become helpless. Most large animals cannot run for more than about 9 miles before they drop. That our ancestors could also organize themselves into hunting parties to harry quarry from different sides or drive prey into confined spaces made us all more effective. But if you can just hang in there, say you go, hey, there's an elk, let's go get it. He takes off. He says, I can't keep up with an elk. But if you just stay at it long enough, they have to stop, and then you'll just be able to go get them. I'll bet you didn't know that, and I don't know that that's very helpful to you, but there that fact is. And then he says this. Going for regular walks reduces the risk of heart attack or stroke by 31%. Just a regular walk, 31%. An analysis of 600,000 people in 2012 found that being active for just 11 minutes a day after the age of 40 adds 1.8 years to your life. I'll do that again. If you walk just 11 minutes a day, and you're over 40, it adds almost 2 years to your life. Being active for an hour or more a day improved life expectancy by 4.2 years. Exercise boosts your immune system, nurtures hormones, lessens the risk of getting diabetes, and a number of cancers, including breast and colorectal. It improves the mood and even staves off senility. The more or less universal belief that we should all walk 10,000 steps a day, about 5 miles, isn't a bad idea, but has no basis in science. Only about 20% of people manage even a moderate level of activity, though. Today, the average American walks only about 1/3 of a mile a day. And that's walking of all types, including around the house and the workplace. Even in an indolent society, it would seem almost impossible to do less. According to The Economist, some American companies have begun offering rewards to employees who log 1 million steps a year on an activity tracker such as a Fitbit. That seems pretty ambitious until you realize that's 2,700 steps a day, a little over a mile. Some workers have reportedly strapped their Fitbits to their dogs to boost their activity scores, according to The Economist. Modern hunter-gatherers, by contrast, average about 19 miles of walking and trotting to secure the day's food. Thank you, Bill Bryson. 1027 on WGN. More about the coyotes in the city. John, they thought that drowning animal was a dog, not a coyote. Oh, I didn't hear that. The one that they went out and rescued on the lake? They thought it was a dog. And then you realize it's a coyote. What are you going to do, put him back? Maybe if we stop taking their land away to build more damn houses, etc. It's sad.
Yeah, see, that's the point of dispute.
I won't read that on the radio. Chicago put raccoons on the south side to fight the overpopulation of stray cats. I had not heard that. I don't know that that's true, but that's what somebody texted in. Thanks for the note on that. Foxes are prolific in the cemeteries north of Wrigley Field. John, coyotes are all around, especially near the river. I started seeing them on the Commonwealth Edison property adjacent to the Target on Addison. Oh, I know exactly where you are. And it is kind of wooded around there. And the North Branch isn't that far away from there. And that's been for years that you've been seeing those.
Quick comment about the cats, though.
Yeah.
Why do they need to get rid of the stray cats? They're not dangerous. Do they eat plants? I mean, how are they pests?
Feral cats? Yeah, I don't know what the population with them is.
See, I thought there was a program where they would release feral cats to
take care of the mice and rats, yeah. Right? That makes sense to me.
But you've been to Europe a lot, and you know, if you go to some, like the times we've been to Greece and Turkey, not a lot, but I've been there a few times.
Cats are everywhere, yeah.
We were dining in a restaurant outside. It was a lovely day, lovely dining area. And they come and sort of shoo the cats off the tables. Off the tables.
We have a
cat. They're harmless.
In our neighborhood, we have a cat that
lives in the neighborhood.
Just wanders around, yeah.
Yeah. And is able, do you all feed that cat?
I don't feed the cat. No, I'm hoping the cat eats the mice.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Oh, I see your point. Yeah. And it's amazing that a cat, because some of the cats that I'm aware of are not in the greatest of shape. They can catch a bird. They can catch a rabbit. You know, some fat cats that can be amazingly quick. Eric Zorn sent me this. A new study found Illinois is the number 46 pet-owning state in the country. 48.6% of the households in Illinois own a domestic pet. So we're at half, but that's actually almost as low as any state in the union. Wow, I don't know what the number one is. It doesn't say here. I'll have to look that up. The health benefits of pets have become increasingly recognized, with living a longer and happier life. Studies show dogs reduce the risk of death by 33%. Okay, I'm just reading this article. That's a stupid sentence. That makes no sense.
No, that sentence might not, but yeah, I think there's studies done that having a pet is good for your health.
Studies show dogs reduce the risk of death by 33%.
Well, I guess
how?
You're going to die, so they can't reduce the risk of death.
Well, if you have cancer, the dog isn't going to cure your cancer.
No, but also
if you have diabetes, the dog isn't going to cure your diabetes.
No, but it gives you, it's a companion, so I think it makes you healthier. But nothing can reduce the risk of death. You're going to die. Right?
Right. So he's on his deathbed and they got him a border collie. It's a last-ditch effort, but what if it works? I understand that it makes you more content, and contentment probably does lead to your physical health. In America, there are now 245 million pets. We have about a pet per person in this country. Number 44 in cat ownership. 21% of households in Illinois have at least one cat. So one in five houses has a cat. About one in two houses has a pet. By the way, cats are number three on pet ownership popularity. Want to guess what number two is? Dogs are one, cats are three. Second most popular pet in Illinois is?
Third, you mean?
Dogs are one, cats are three.
Fish.
What's number two? Fish is number two. Oh.
That's not even a pet.
Yes, it is.
That's not a pet.
Why isn't a fish? It's, like
it's a moving vase.
Better not tell that to my daughter. She would have been upset.
A dog
upset.
Knows it's a pet. A cat knows it's a pet. A fish doesn't know it's a pet. Audra Wilson joins us, a bariatric dietitian at the Northwestern Medicine Metabolic Health and Surgical Weight Loss Center. There's a lot of reporting, and you always get this in January, don't you, about new ways or ideas to lose weight, exercise more, honor your resolution. Intermittent fasting is something that I'm hearing about. So let's jump into this a little bit. Audra, it's John Williams. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So tell me what you do for a living. What's your specialty? What do you do?
I work with patients that want to make some diet and lifestyle changes typically lose some weight through diet and lifestyle changes themselves or with the adjunct of medication or surgery.
I saw bariatric, and when I see that bariatric surgery, I think I know what that is. That's where you remove part of the intestines, right, or digestive tract, and that helps people consume or absorb less food, right?
Yeah, there's a couple different types of surgery. One, you're removing about two-thirds of the stomach, and that's called the gastric sleeve. And then there's the bypass where even more of the stomach is removed and the intestines are rerouted to promote that malabsorption, which can help with weight loss as well.
But that's a last-ditch thing, right?
I think if people have tried a lot of different weight loss programs and diets in the past and have had no success or varying success or yo-yoing weight, it can be a great option for patients to lose weight long-term. And it takes a lot of work still to lose weight, even with the surgery. But it's just another option, another tool in the toolbox, we like to think of it as.
I wondered about that, though. If you do get that, is it just easier? Or may you make it sound like it's not a slam dunk? You still have to alter your intake and exercise more? You're not automatically going to be thinner all the time?
Exactly. And it is viewed as maybe something that makes things easier. It's just a tool to be able to eat less, but it takes a lot of work on diet and lifestyle, including portions, healthier options, and a lot of exercise, like you mentioned.
What do you make of this intermittent fasting that I'm hearing about, and what is that?
Well, intermittent fasting, there's a lot of different types of intermittent fasting. The most common ones would be just not eating for, say, 12 hours a day, but eating in a short window of anywhere from, I've heard it as small as 2, up to 8 hours possibly. And there's also a type where you have really calorie-restricted days, around 500 calories, maybe for 2 days, and then the rest of the time just eat whatever you want.
That's a version I was reading about, too. And in general, what are you all saying about that?
It's a way to restrict calories, which usually results in weight loss, but it's pretty difficult to go long periods without eating for most people, and for a lot of people, that can lead to some binging behaviors. So it really, you know, it depends on the person, but I think for most people, it's a pretty difficult practice. It's just difficult.
All right, but it's a means to an end, but there's nothing inherently better about intermittent fasting, about this narrow window. I mean, I could eat all day long as I consume fewer calories, right? I mean, does it matter when I consume them, or does it just matter the total that I consume?
It matters, both matter. I think with intermittent fasting, you are eating less calories, which is pretty much the mechanism of action of any diet plan that you choose. But with the intermittent fasting, there is some emerging research that it's beneficial for different metabolic states or conditions. But there's not a lot of research yet, so it's not something we recommend on a daily basis for anyone to start. And in fact, there are some people that really shouldn't use intermittent fasting.
Well, I've had it in mind that when I hear about this, maybe if I eat food at night and then I lay down and go to sleep, that food's just sitting there, and that's but it would be sitting there if it was 2 in the afternoon. But I have in my mind anyway that if I'm up and moving about, that my body digests it better or doesn't absorb so much of the badness of it. But I'm just making this up. I have no reason to believe that. I mean, what does my body care if I'm going to go running in a few minutes, if I eat at 2 in the morning or 2 in the afternoon? I can't imagine my body knows or cares, you know?
Well, I think what our body is really good at is using the energy that we provide it. And when we provide it with excess energy, our body stores that pretty immediately as fat. So it's a really efficient process. So when you're saying you're eating and then laying down, you don't need as much energy to be laying down, obviously, as opposed to if you were running. So if you eat a larger meal in the evening, that can lead to weight gain over time just because we're having more energy than we need at any one time.
At that time. But I was under all right, so if I eat food, though, my body doesn't use that as an energy source right away. Does it, does it take the fat that I already have and use that as the fuel, or does it take the food in my stomach and use that as the fuel?
So when you're not eating in between meals, you're creating an energy deficit. So your body's going to use the energy that it has, which it takes about 4 hours and maybe even more to digest fats and proteins. So as soon as that's used up, we're going to get those hunger signals. But it doesn't, your body doesn't go to fat stores right away for energy, rather lean muscle mass, so, or lean tissue. So we want to make sure that we're eating so that doesn't happen.
Hmm. Okay, but if I understand correctly, then it doesn't take the fat around my hips or whatever, or stomach, and use that as a source. It's more using the food that I eat. That comes first, right?
You're correct. That's right.
Well, then I guess it does make sense not to put that food in your stomach and just lay there. Better that I eat a big meal early, use that fuel rather than store that fuel, right?
Right, and I think if you could eat similarly sized meals throughout the day, that'd be even better because you'd have a real consistent energy infusion throughout the entire day.
All right, but the idea then that you said 2 hours, I've heard 6 hours, and that sounds ridiculous to me too. I mean, there's no magic about 2 hours or 6 hour windows. I guess earlier in the day is better, right? Because at least then you have more activity, you'll burn up that fuel. But there's nothing magic about consuming food in a very small window, right?
Not that we know of yet. The research just doesn't support that. And I think it's important for people to know that it's very difficult to only eat 2 or 6 hours in the day. And again, it can lead to that binging behavior. And I think that's something that a lot of healthcare professionals would worry about with intermittent fasting.
Well, what do you do for somebody? So you're not going to do the bariatric surgery until, you know, later. Let's first try and get this person to be healthier and lose weight. What do you tell them to do?
Well, we'd work on taking foods and how they're eating now and improving it. So maybe smaller portions. Maybe we track our calories to see how many we're getting throughout the day. Definitely add exercise. Make sure you're well hydrated, getting around 64 ounces of calorie-free fluids, limiting alcohol, and making sure that you're including lean proteins, whole grains, lots of fruits and vegetables, and healthy fats in your diet.
I am not getting 64 ounces of water, that's for sure. Is that a big deal for people?
What can happen is with dehydration, we can feel some hunger cues that are misplaced. So sometimes when we're chronically dehydrated, we may feel more hungry throughout the day, which can lead to more snacking and, you know, excess calorie intake. So staying hydrated can prevent that extra snacking.
In other words, it's literally taking the space that food would. Are you kind of tricking your body there?
Well, our body gets confused between hunger and thirst. So sometimes our body's confused, so we need to make sure we're getting what we need with the fluid.
Yeah, right. And if you had to prioritize eat less, exercise more, which would you put first? What's more important to people trying to lose weight?
That is a very difficult question to answer because I think they're both so important, but diet is really the most important thing, but exercise again is very important as well.
Yeah, I'm not an expert, as you know, but I thought that if I had to do one more than the other, I would eat less rather than exercise more. But that sounds stupid because exercising not only helps you lose weight, but it's good for your heart. Blah blah blah.
Right.
So maybe it's a push, huh?
Yes, I think I think when people think of exercise too, they think of, well, I need to train for a 5K or run a marathon, but really it's just moving more and walking. Walking is a great exercise that everyone can do. Just walk outside your door and do that. It doesn't have to be a very intense amount of exercise, just
right.
Moderate. It could be great.
Well, when you're telling people to lose weight, Audra, do you say that they have to get cardio going? They have to, you know, get so many beats per minute, or just walk longer? You don't have to get your heart. Forget about your heart health for just a minute. We're just trying to lose weight here. Would you say as long as you're moving, that satisfies the calorie burn?
We're always concerned about heart health, so I think moderate to vigorous activity is great. But if you're not maybe able to do that right now because you have reduced mobility or you're just really not in shape anymore, any movement that you can do in addition to what you're doing now is really beneficial.
But as a weight loss strategy, it's insufficient to just be walking, that you need to get cardio in as well, you say?
With strictly weight loss, it's really about burning those calories. So movement can be effective. There's something called non-exercise activity thermogenesis, and that's found to be really impactful for patients that are especially that are obese, and that's just the everyday movements that you're doing that can really help you burn extra calories and lead to weight loss over time.
If you have the choice of, say you're watching a half hour, you're going to watch Jeopardy tonight, would you advise people to watch it standing up versus sitting down?
Sure, that's something you could do. You could also throw in some squats that way or walking back and forth, marching in place. Any of that would be great.
It's at 10:44. Give me one more minute. Audra Wilson's a bariatric dietitian at Northwestern at their Metabolic Health and Surgical Weight Loss Center. My number's 312-981-7200. I'll bet you've got a question or an observation about this. What are you doing? And you have a question for Audra. 312-981-7200. You can call or text right now. On a phone line is Audra Wilson. She's a bariatric dietitian. She's over at Northwestern. And we're just talking about some of the things people are doing these days, both steps, but also intermittent fasting. There's a story at CNN.com. And in fact, my friend Pete McMurray is talking to Dr. Oz about this on his show on Sunday. More about this down the road. But here's some of the texts. John, I'm doing intermittent eating. It's great. My eating window is noon to 7 p.m. I feel better. I have more energy. I'm losing weight. I love it. But another of you said, 773, I've been doing intermittent fasting for 6 months now, but I take meds at bedtime. Does this break the fast? By the way, I haven't seen much difference. Audra, any observations about those two texts that came in?
I think it's a great example of how any type of diet can be really helpful for some people, while other people just don't see the same results. So it sounds like it's working for one of the people trying it, but the other one, not so much.
Isn't that the way? I mean, that, I'm glad you said that, though, because some people, I think, might feel judged if they're not losing weight and they are eating healthy or they are exercising or they do intermittent fasting and it's not working for them. So then don't give up, but maybe try something different and who knows, huh?
Right. And I think if you're, whatever you're trying, first talk to your doctor, especially in light of the person talking about taking medications in the evening, because a lot of diabetic medications, it might be contraindicated to do intermittent fasting, but also talk to a dietitian or people like our clinic where we can talk to you about different options for losing weight or diet and lifestyle changes that might work better for you.
This texter said, I just started a 12-hour fast. I only eat 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. I'm in bed by 8 o'clock. Well, I guess that's the thing, though. If I stopped eating at 6, you know, and you don't want, if you're going to stay to that rule, one way to do it is then say, fine, go to bed. But I don't want to go to bed at 8 o'clock. This is very challenging, I think, for some people to not eat after 6 p.m. and so on and so forth. Is about this, you're not ruling it out as a bad strategy. Do you recommend a window, 2 hours, 4 hours, 12 hours? Do you care about that, Audra?
I think your point is very well taken. If you're not eating at nighttime, doing that nighttime snacking, maybe a 12-hour fast from maybe 7 to 7, say, would be helpful for you. And what you're doing there is maybe not only intermittent fasting, but also just eliminating that nighttime snacking that probably led to weight gain in the first place.
Okay, but so, if I was doing 12 hours, mm-hmm. better probably to schedule that to start earlier in the day. Say I went 10 to 10, 11 to 11, there's 12 hours. Mm-hmm. But I also heard you say a little while ago that that's not such a good idea because then you are going to go to bed shortly after 11 o'clock and you don't want to have fresh food in your system just then, right?
Right. So, yes, 6 to 6, 7 to 7, that would be probably better. If you're looking to lose weight, then, like you said, the 10 to 10, because you're eating, you know, later in the day, we kind of promote eating within an hour of waking up and then, you know, having dinner and being done. But if you're a night owl and wake up later, maybe a 10 to 10 would work better for you. So you have to look at your lifestyle, too, and your work hours and your waking hours.
Okay, but maybe that's it then. So say I do 10 to 10, but I work a second shift or I stay up till 3 in the morning. Man, I'm moving about. I'm active. Then it's not so bad, right? Then it's not what I was imagining, which is somebody then going to sleep right away.
Right, and those different, you know, waking hours probably need to be adjusted. So diet that's just sort of black and white, that it can be like intermittent fasting, it can be tweaked to maybe work better for you. But again, if you're not sure about it, I would talk to a dietitian or your physician to maybe help you with those tweaks.
Some of you are texting stuff like this. 847 says, you don't need surgery. Just put down the fork, capital letters, change your diet, as though typing on your laptop were that easy. You know, it's. I think that's maybe from a thin person. Half the population is having trouble with this. It's not that easy. It's just not that easy, is it?
No, it's certainly not. And unfortunately, we have to deal with that stigma and that sort of false belief that it's just as easy as eating less. There's a lot that goes into weight, and there's weight stigma, and there's emotional eating, and there's disordered eating, and there's metabolic changes that happen over time. So it's really, really not that easy, and I can't stress that enough. And also that taking surgery is not in any way the easy way out. It's very difficult. It's a very difficult process, and it still requires the same diet and lifestyle changes with the addition of exercise that you would be making with any diet change that you make.
Jill, you had a question. What can we do for you? You're on WGN.
Yeah. Yes, I'm doing low-carb diet, kind of like Atkins, premium protein shakes and Atkins TV dinners. But I'm just wondering about, I'm down like 65, I have a few more to go. Transitioning back into a more normal diet without regaining the weight?
Right, so when you're really limiting one nutrient like carbohydrates, it's important to slowly integrate it back into your diet. So I would suggest adding carb servings back in, maybe one or two at a time over maybe a month. But maybe having the guidance of a dietitian might be helpful during that time. But just slowly integrating back in it. Don't go right back to how you were eating previously before the weight loss.
Right, when I go off at all, I just go nuts. All I want is sugar, you know, ices and ice cream, and I don't even eat real food. I'm just like, you know, really hard controlling those carbs. You think some people just have to limit their carbs for the rest of their life?
Yeah, what about that? I mean, could some people just say, that's my weak spot. I'll never eat carbs. I'll never have cake, cookies, bread, ice cream, stuff like that.
That's not the best idea. We want to make sure that we have a varied diet, and it seems like this caller and a lot of people that do go on these really low-carb diets, it's just not sustainable, so it's hard to go back to what you might call normal eating. And any diet that restricts you that much, where you feel like you, quote, kind of go nuts when you go off it, is probably too restrictive to begin with. And we want to make sure we're getting all of our nutrition. So whole grains and carbohydrates provide a lot of fiber, B vitamins, so they're an important part of the diet. I would try to include them in some way.
Audra Wilson, bariatric dietitian at the Northwestern Medicine Metabolic Health and Surgical Weight Loss Center. Nice to talk to you, Audra. We appreciate your help today. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Thank you so much.
John Williams, good morning. Thanks for joining us. 312-981-7200 is how you're texting in. You can call, too. It's a talk show, you know. We'll talk to Hannah Stanley, our resident royal watcher here at WGN. She's going to say hi to us after 11:30. Our news click was, would you downsize your involvement in the royal family if you were Meghan or Harry? They are, and I think it's intriguing. I would. I would be very I would love to live in castles and palaces, and I would like the attention and the creature comforts. I think there's a lot of money involved, too. It'd be hard to say no to all of that. But every time you so much as smile wrong or don't address the queen properly or who knows what you do, I think it would be a terrible life, enough to make you wonder about the kids that you raise.
It's an easier choice knowing that, you know, she's not going to go to driving a CTA bus or something like that.
Right.
I mean, they're going to be just fine.
Yeah, I guess.
Right? I mean, they're going to become financially independent, they said, but I don't think that'll be too difficult for them.
Yeah, but I mean, I'd like to, maybe Hannah has a handle on this. What does that mean? I mean, they're billionaires, the royal family, right? I imagine the sons get some of that, or at least their wherewithal is comfortably taken care of. If you had to strike out on your own, even if you're the two of them, how much money are they going to make? What kind of life is that? It'd be a comfortable life, but it would be a different life. It would be a life where, put it this way, I'll bet they don't every month go, okay, 2,416 minus...
How many times did you have fish and chips?
I know, it's like, oh my God, did you see our credit card bill? What did you do? And I don't think they're having those conversations. They will now. They will now. If you're going to cut off,
well,
it'll be a different lifestyle,
fine.
My friend.
But I wouldn't do it. I think I'm inclined to think I wouldn't do it.
Why not? You like the attention and all of the
trappings? I don't like the attention, but they can stay as hidden as they want, I guess. I don't
know.
You think
so?
I don't think quitting this is going to get rid of the attention. It might lessen it a little bit.
Or maybe make it worse. Now they'll get it on both continents.
Now the sightings, the paparazzi shots will be even better because they'll be rarer.
And also, I think it'll be very easy to mock the Endeavor, right? Like, oh, really, you're a commoner now? And they're still being chauffeured around
and
stuff like that.
It's like a conscious uncoupling.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I think it's going to be harder for Harry because he's the one that's used to it his whole life. She's not.
She's the one
having these breakdowns all the time lately, it seems.
Did you know? I didn't know she was having breakdowns.
Well, when she did the interview and she was like, oh, thanks for, asking me how I'm doing, that type of thing. She knows what she was into. I mean, didn't she know what she was signing up for?
Would you?
This is what bothers me.
If you fell in love with, say you didn't want that, and maybe she's equipped to handle it, she's an actress, but say you fell in love with somebody and that was the deal and you did not want that. Right?
I wouldn't marry him.
That's quite a proposition, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to tell your heart no. You love somebody. You want to marry them. They sure did seem smitten with each other. But then you go, now what am I going to do?
Well, yeah. I mean, Grace Kelly did it. She gave up being an actress, and she went to the Queen of Monaco and became,
How did that work out?
Well, okay. So she had a car accident, Steve. That really wasn't exactly too soon.
I'm just saying.
Too soon. Right. Was she driving herself? She was too, right?
So her daughter was in the car.
She should have taken advantage of the trappings.
Well, yeah, that's what was a little confusing.
The two of you just stop.
Yeah.
You know what we're talking about,
but
right?
But you know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, I do. I know that story, okay. I just think you're missing my point, which is would the unhappiness that buying into the royal family gets you be enough to keep you from then getting into the royal family? Maybe Meghan should have said no. Maybe you or I would say no. But how do you make that calculation?
Well, look, there are conversations people have, advisors all the time. They say sit down with your to-be and talk about finances and make sure you're on the same page. There are religious organizations where you go like pre-Cana and things like that to talk to each other about your beliefs. And so, I mean, I don't think it's too uncommon. There are Hallmark Christmas movies where people break up with each other for all sorts of reasons. So I think it could happen.
I'm not even going to address that last thing you said.
Yeah, you're saying maybe they didn't have the conversation, though?
I think you can't know what it's like. I think you can't know. You go, oh, okay, I'll be photographed a lot, da-da-da-da-da. I don't think you can know. Diana was miserable, right? She had a fairy book life. That was great for her. Oh, no, she was miserable marrying into that family.
Right. She might not have been in love either.
Right.
Well, that's another thing.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sue wanted to say something. You're on WGN. Hi, Sue.
Hi. How are you guys? I love this show. I just have to tell you, she bit on for all this. She knew exactly what she was getting into. She loved the publicity. She loved everything about it. And now she's splitting up that family. I have no sympathy for her whatsoever.
Yeah, you may not be alone.
Diana was 19. This girl's 33. Come on.
Why are you mad at her? I mean, she's not turning.
There's no comparison.
But she's not really splitting up the family. She's just changing the way they live.
Well, Harry knows that she's not happy, and for that, and in part, they're going to move to the United States for half of the year.
And maybe it was his idea.
I know. But she knows exactly what she's doing.
Interesting. Hey, thanks for the phone call, Sue. I appreciate you dialing us in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I miss him already.
Harry?
I don't even...
Both of them.
I can't follow the game.
I don't think they'll be going anywhere. We will see more of them now on every cover of People magazine for the next month.
We're talking about stray cats and feral cats. We obviously have coyotes in Chicago. I don't think there's feral dogs, but there sure are a lot of feral cats in some neighborhoods. Elif was wondering, what's the problem with stray cats? If they can survive out there, why do we care? Hi, John. Stray cats are a monumental problem. According to the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, cats kill 2.6 billion birds a year.
This is a huge thing. And they talk about, people worried about windmills and skyscrapers. It's not close. If you want to save birds, get rid of the cats.
Cats
and not
kill.
Just in pet cats too that are allowed to go outside and things.
I've heard these numbers, and they just flabbergast.
It's not close.
I can't even believe it, that cats kill 2.6 billion birds a year.
I mean, you said yourself, a cat, you can see a cat killing birds, even unhealthy cats.
I'm aware of that happening. I don't think I've ever seen it in action, but I know sometimes the cat will trot in the house with a bird in its mouth,
mm-hmm.
or bring in a rabbit's head, and you go, how did you do that? How did you do that? It's amazing to me. 2.6 billion birds a year in the United States and Canada. About coyotes in our neighborhoods. Go ahead, Steve.
I just have to. Steve Grzanich is continuing to provide vital information about the royal family.
Yes.
And he has just told me that Madame Tussauds Wax Museum has taken the couple's statues out.
You think they're going to rethink it now?
Okay, back to the birds.
In this case, coyotes. Last year, says 630, my 80-pound dog was outside when a coyote came up. I ran back to grab him. There were four other coyotes waiting for him. They sent out the one coyote to bait him, says 630.
I know it's happened before, but a pack of three coyotes went through our backyard. And that when they just kind of, you know, trotted along, one of them went up on this, I don't know if it was a wood pile or what, in my neighbor's house, and to get the bigger advantage to look around to scout things out. And we used to have one where it would turn on about the same time each night, would turn on the motion detector light in our garden. It's enough that I could get up and run to the window.
Really?
Watch it trot down my driveway. Yeah.
847, John, in Wakanda, more and more coyotes are seen in packs, 4 to 7. And near the swamps and subdivisions. We played some Jeopardy questions and answers for you earlier, and kind of a played along. If I get a chance here, I'll play a couple more for you. Watching the men on Jeopardy is more than a game. Of course, each wants to win, but their respect for each other while having fun, and what is probably a feeling of we're doing something that no one else will ever do with Alex Trebek, is a big part of it. It is their Super Bowl. It's amazing to me. I just, you know, we'll state the obvious here, but these guys are recalling things that they could not have been exposed to many times, right? Like the second line in a verse in the Bible, or some ancient text, or a city or a lake, just the arcana that these people are able to recall, that they have that information. I'll bet they didn't run into it a lot. I mean, the breadth of their knowledge is so vast that you couldn't run into these things a lot. They're just consuming, consuming, consuming. It's the recall. Like if I ever ran into the second largest port city in France in a book, or had that fact stuffed away, I would have only come upon that once, right? It's just not a common occurrence. It's not like statistics of your favorite baseball team. Some of this stuff you cannot have seen that many times. But they retain it, and they can recall it. And it's almost superhuman. It's enough to make you think that, in the case of James Holzhauer, so what does he do with that brain of his? He gambles on sporting events in Las Vegas. That's his living. You can make money any way you want, but there's a part of me that thinks if you have that engine, that tool between your ears, what else could it do? You know, some of these people are real estate agents. You got to make a living. But you'd think that there would be some way to sort of parlay that brain into something a little more useful or more revelatory. Like they should be discovering the new penicillin or something. I'm telling them what to do with their lives, and maybe it's not so easy as that. But they've obviously got something extraordinary there. And just to see those things on display, all three of them in a row, is really remarkable. The guy that's losing, Brad Rutter, he has not won either of the matches. Ken Jennings won the first night, and then James Holzhauer from the Chicago area won last night. But that guy who's in third place has beat Jennings head-to-head four times. So he is really, if you had to use that as a sort of guide, you'd say that he's got a good chance of winning. But he doesn't look like he's up to speed with them at all. And yeah, the fact that it's Trebek is not well. He's 76 years old and looks great for a guy with cancer, too. There's a lot of warmth you can tell in the room for the host of that show.
And I do like watching the camaraderie between the three of them. It's very cute, some of the comments they throw. And you know, Jamie goes and shakes their hands afterwards. And I don't know if they're supposed to do that on the regular show, because they usually don't. But he's just like, he acts like he's owning the place, and I love it. I mean, it's kind of fun to watch that part.
When it was Double Jeopardy for him, and he was going to bet all, like he gets, what is it called? The Daily Double.
Yes.
So he can double his money. He bets all of it. And then he uses a gesture of like pushing your chips in.
Pushing the chips in, yeah.
All into the metal. We're going to put all my chips in. And then the other guy kind of mocked that a little later on.
But he let Ken use it. Yeah. He said, yeah, you can use it. It's not, you know,
that's my gesture.
Patented.
Yeah. Anthony, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for calling in. What can we do for you?
You know, just a thing about the coyotes. You know, one of the reasons we're seeing so many of them is because we keep buying up, you know, farmland and building these monstrosity homes. And even out in the forest preserves, I see more and more of them coming this way because, again, they're getting surrounded. There's no place for these animals to go, and there's nothing left for them to eat. So that's why we see so many of them. But they keep talking about, you know, global warming and this and that, but really what we're doing to these creatures is kind of, it's a sin. It really is. But that's the reason you're seeing so many of them. I truly believe that because I see more and more as I see more homes going up.
Now, know? I've had experts tell me that the reason there's so many is because there's so much for them to eat, and that it could also be because there are more people putting their garbage out and more homes out in rural areas.
The theory is they wouldn't be there but for us.
If an expert told you that, it's because they must have something to do with the people doing the
home. Anthony, thanks for the call. He's not expert, schmexpert. By the way, Kathy wanted to say something about the royal family. Hi, Kathy. You're on WGN.
Hi. I was just going to say that, I mean, especially the previous caller, why did she put it all on her? He knew what he was getting into also. You know, I mean, he married a non-royal. And the other thing is, I think I have heard a few crabby people complaining that they didn't like that they were going to leave the royal family because of her racial background.
Well, do you think life is more difficult for her because of that?
Possibly. You know, especially maybe in that world. I don't know, but I have heard that.
Yeah. I mean, I believe that. And I don't know how that, I don't know how she's receiving that.
You know, I would think that would be the more conservative branch of England, you know, who really support the royals. I don't know that much about it. But, you know, it just seems like a really, I don't know, I think it's their business. You know, this Harry has zilch chance of ever being king, so why should he put up with it?
That's a good point. I mean, maybe you don't even want to be king, but maybe that would be the insult. Yeah. That might be a reason to stay in it, too. It's like, well, I'll never have to be king. But
you get the money, or the lifestyle, I guess.
That's the thing. I hope Hannah knows a little bit about this. What's the lifestyle that they have? What's the cash in and cash out? I want to know how they afford the life that they do. Like, do they get a check each month? Do they pay any bills at all?
Do people just send them clothing? You know? Do they get like a Stitch pick the package every day of the most expensive possible clothes or what?
Interesting call. I appreciate you joining us, Kathy.
Thank you. I miss you.
I appreciate you listening to us at 11:23. I'm on weekdays from 9 to noon now. That's a relatively new shift for me here. By the way, William Shatner had a song that he sang, and I forget who it was with. And it was about the people that decide they don't want the riches and they want to live a common life. And I'm trying to recall who the song was with. It's a terrific song. It's funny, too. Does anybody help me out with this? 312-981-7200. I'm looking at Elif, who's pretty good with music. But this is such an obtuse reference. I don't know if anybody knows what the heck I'm talking about. I'm trying to think of, because I used to play it a lot just in my playlist. It was William Shatner, guest stars on a song. And it was about the common people. I think that might have even been the title of the song. Not ringing a bell with you. Somebody's going to help me out on this, and I'm going to find it. 312-981-7200. Hey, Scooter, this is John. You're on WGN. What can you do for us, Scooter?
Hey, John, how you doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, John, now, just come forward. that follows the royal crown and all. And this a person told me this yesterday. How true it is, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But the Harry's father, Diana, his mother, had an affair with the horse trainer or something. That is legit. Real son. I don't know if that's true or not.
You're saying that the brothers are not.
It follows this really, you know, every day and everything. So this is what he told me yesterday. How true it is, I don't know, but he's not really the real son of his father.
Yeah, I don't believe. If you had to say, all right, you got to bet your house.
Do they have separate fathers?
I would bet that they have separate fathers. That's my guess.
Yeah, that's what I was told. That's why he doesn't really care about being in the crown or something. That's what he's explained to me. This guy was telling me this, that he doesn't really care about being in the royal family and stuff like that. And they don't really let him go off to his own thing.
How true
it is, I don't know, John, but listen to you every day. Love the show.
Thank you.
Keep it up, John.
Thanks for the phone call. Yeah, and the brothers don't look a ton alike, but I know plenty of siblings that don't either.
Do they have different dads, too?
Maybe they do. Gosh, there was this feature report on the CBS News the other day about that, about the DNA kits that everybody likes to get, the 23 chromosome things, you know, to find out about their ancestry and or do you have a predisposition to an illness or something like that. But just so many people are finding out that they're not related to each other or are in different ways or are related to the milkman, right? And it's devastating, fascinating. It's a lot of things. So now the people that run these companies are training their call staff to handle the influx of calls. And there are support groups now for people who, after having discovered that that's not their father or, you know, they have a lost sister or something, they have support groups for these people because it just happens left and right. It's 11:26. So Hannah's going to fill us in on some of this. Is that Sean on line three? Is he going to get that song title for me? Oh, yeah, I think, and Ruben knows it, too. Hey, Sean, are you there?
I'm right here.
What's the song?
It's Common People is the name of the song, and it was a cover by a band called Pulp, an English band.
Pulp. Common People's song, right?
Correct, yeah, and he just sang it by himself. He didn't sing it with anybody else. It was just him singing the song.
Sean, thank you for the phone call. I'm glad you're listening.
You bet.
Have a good day. And by the way, but I think Ruben's got a different version of that, and this is the one I know. Hey, Ruben, you're on the air.
Yeah, that was from a movie. I forget the name of the movie, but it was Steve Carell was in the movie. It was about a bunch of wild animals that were, like, revolting against the suburbs. And the song is called Rockin' the Suburbs by Ben Folds 5.
Well, keep going. I know that song, but I thought it was Ben Folds with William Shatner. Do I remember that correctly?
Yeah, he's not singing. He's actually just talking in the middle. He's basically like, hi, I'm your neighbor. Hey, listen, tell your dogs to quit knocking my... And then he starts like talking about how he's going to anger management and stuff. And then at the end, he starts yelling at the guy. But he's not singing. He's just kind of like talking. He's doing a little monologue.
I got to start... I'm going to dial around for this. All right.
Okay.
Thank you for the call, Ruben.
Right.
Have a good day.
Good luck, John.
Yeah, I need that. It's 11:27. Steve's going to do the news in just a minute. The markets are up, but there is a lot of informed speculation now about what caused that airplane to go down, the Ukraine airliner.
She came from Greece. She had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College. That's where I... She told me that her dad was loaded. I said, in that case, I'll have a rum and Coca-Cola. She said, fine. And in 30 seconds' time, she said, I want to live like common people. I want to do whatever common people do. I want to sleep with common people. I want to sleep with common people like you. Well, what else could I do? I said, I'll see what I can do. I took her to a supermarket. I don't know why, but I had to start it somewhere. So it started there. I said, pretend you've got no money. She just laughed and said, oh, you're so funny. I said, yeah? Well, I can't see anyone else smiling in here.
Are you sure?
You want to live like common people? You want to see whatever common people see? You want to sleep with common people? You want to sleep with common people like me. But she didn't understand.
She just smiled and held my hand.
When Ben Folds jumps in, it's 11:35 and the song goes on. I love that tune. Ben Folds 5. The strangest introduction, maybe, to a conversation about the royal family. Hannah Stanley's on WGN Radio. Hey, Hannah, it's John. How are you?
I'm so good, and I'm thrilled to get to talk with you. That song so much reminds me of What Did the Simple Folk Do from Camelot. It's like a new version of it.
What a nice reference. Absolutely true. They're kind of curious about it, and they sort of want to experience it, but the people on that end say, be careful what you ask for.
It's not as glorious as one would think, trust me.
It's charming. Hannah, what's your connection to the royal family? How is it that you're so good on this stuff?
It is a bizarre fascination, much like they're wondering what the simple folk do. I'm wondering what the royal family does, and it's so much easier now to be good at knowing what they're doing. It really is just there's a mythology to it, and the history behind it is so fascinating to me.
So, what did Prince Harry and Meghan Markle announce? What are they going to do?
Well, they created a royal mess now, didn't they? What they did, they of course wed May 19th of 2018 to tremendous fanfare, and she was welcomed into the British royal family, the Windsors, it seemed very welcoming, even though she was American, even though she was a divorcee. And since then, she's been met with a lot of scrutiny, as all of the royal family has been, from the tabloids, and then more recently from the public. They were turning on her just a little bit. They felt that she was causing a rift between the brothers, of course, William, who is to be king at some point, and then Harry. And now it seems like Harry might have in fact gone along with this, and they have essentially gone rogue, Sarah Palin like, if you will, and decided to step away from quote unquote senior royal duties while still serving Her Majesty the Queen, who happens to be his grandmother.
What's the nature of the rift between the brothers? I mean, how was she a problem for them?
Well, I believe my belief through my readings and really trying to see through much of the smoke screen from the tabloids who are trying to sell papers is that they wanted different things in life. They had split the offices. The brothers always had a shared office, and they had split the offices, which didn't seem to royal watchers, that didn't seem like a big deal. You know, they're growing up. William is to be king. Harry is never going to be. And so it made sense that they would spend their time and efforts doing different things for the world. They're all four of them, William and Catherine, his wife, and then Harry and now Meghan, his wife, have a lot of environmental issue or, you know, interests and really trying to do good things philanthropically. So that made sense. But then there were things where they weren't together for holidays. They weren't all these things that had normally been the way it was.
Yeah.
Got a little wonky.
I understand that, but but it seems to me like the travels that Meghan and Harry have done seem to be appropriate and good-willed. I wouldn't fault, like, whatever the problem is with the family at the holidays or the roles that they're playing. It seemed to me like, independent of all that, Meghan and Harry were good people and doing good things.
Absolutely. And truth be told, we've all had a holiday where one of the kids gets a cold and you don't want to spread it to everybody else, or somebody has a migraine and you just don't go over. None of that would have been ever disclosed to the public. They would have just said they're not spending the holidays together. That's fine. So none of that raised either of my eyebrows until yesterday, when this Instagram post of all things, not a royal decree, but an Instagram post came out and said, by the way, we're stepping away from our duties. We're going to be normal people and become financially independent, which is a fascinating thing to say.
Yeah, I wonder what that means. I was reading in the Tribune, and here's just a sentence or two about that. The royal pair described their new roles on a website. The site notes that the sovereign grant which funds the monarchy, covers just 5% of the costs for the Duke and the Duchess and is used for their official office expenses, but they want to cut this financial tie. It makes it sound like they're not getting much from the family anyway.
Well, isn't that convenient? The sovereign grant is a fraction. However, Harry and William are both on Daddy's payroll. Prince Charles has paid William and Harry more than $6.5 million, American dollars, in the last year alone, about $3 million of which, so just under half of it, went to Harry. That's not the sovereign grant. That's money from your father. So now, is that going to go away? Yeah. We don't know.
Okay, that's not known. I guess the family has to decide what this means, and are they going to penalize them for it? Right.
Right. So that dollar amount, by the way, I got from Reuters. So we can trust that is very close to fully accurate. But yeah, Prince Charles now has to decide whether or not that money is going to stay in wherever it came from, and if he's going to cut them off entirely. Also, any royal travels that they would in fact do would still be paid for by the British taxpayers. So if they set up a home in, let's say, Toronto, but then have to fly back to any of the British Royal Empire places that they would be going to visit on official state business, that would still be paid for, and never mind the security, that will have to remain, and that will still be on the taxpayers.
Well, maybe if I'm his father, and maybe I'm not his father, but if I'm his father, maybe I respect that decision. I mean, nobody more than his own father knows how invasive the press can be. Maybe he can respect this. I guess my point is, and not cut him off.
And that's ultimately up to currently the Queen, who will direct Charles's use of that money, then Charles when he is king, and then ultimately his brother, which is very, very fascinating.
What do you mean?
Well, if there happens to be a rift, which we're speculating there might be, William could just say, look, you made this choice. You know, Elizabeth's uncle was king. Elizabeth was never supposed to be queen. She was not in direct line until the Duke of Windsor, who was the king, abdicated because he wanted to marry, ironically, an American divorcee, Wallace Simpson, and stepped aside. And then he was cut off by his brother.
I haven't heard you address, nor maybe should we, her race, but I know when they first got engaged, you couldn't help but notice and talk a little bit about that. Is that playing any role in any of this, do you think?
I don't. I don't think at all. You know, she was welcomed into the royal family with nary a mention of it from the royal family. I think that we've far moved past that. There have been exceedingly more scandalous things, and I don't consider her race and her mixed race to be scandalous, but, you know, decades ago it definitely would have been. And like I said, there have been far greater scandals in the royal family very recently than someone getting married to a mixed race person.
Yeah, boy, the royal family's not having a very good couple of months here, are they?
Oh, no, no, no. And the one who I think should be most upset is Beatrice, because her wedding is coming up and her father's in a whole handful of trouble, and now this by her cousin.
You got another minute?
Yes, of course I do.
Anna Stanley, stay right there. It's 11:43. 312-981-7200. You may have a question or comment. I don't track this stuff at all. If there's a $64 question out there that needs to be asked and I haven't asked it, it's because I don't know. Maybe you do. If you want to chime in, 312-981-7200. Call or text WGN. This is WGN. John Williams here weekdays from 9 to noon on social media. WGN King John. We, on my Facebook page, always post the news click question, our daily web poll. Yesterday, we asked you what you would do if you were Harry and Meghan, and 73% of you said, I, too, would downsize my involvement in the royal family. Our royal watcher here at WGN is Hannah Stanley. And Hannah, a couple of texts and phone calls for you. You'll take those, right?
Of course. I'm happy to.
773 said, Meghan wants the royal lifestyle, but not the duty and obligation, which is part of the British royal title, says Tina. So maybe they want their cake and eat it. Or what's your reaction to that?
Well, I don't blame them, to be quite honest, but she definitely knew what she was getting into. She was she's admitted to being a huge fan of Princess Diana, Harry's mother, of course, and everything that was written about Diana talked about what she experienced when she moved into the castle, to the palace, and what the how the life was very, very different from what she had expected. Now, Diana was incredibly young when this change was made in her life. But by all accounts, Meghan knew what she was getting into, without question. And she was already a celebrity in her own right. Yeah. So she was used to a little bit of scrutiny.
A little bit, but she wasn't a celebrity on par with a royal family member.
Oh, absolutely not.
815
no.
texted in, Hannah, and said, "Hey, John, I feel like Harry does not want to lose his wife like he lost his mother." It's an interesting observation. And 312 says, "Remember that Harry inherited millions of dollars from his mother. I applaud Harry for getting his wife away from those tabloids. They contributed to the death of Diana. And by the way, Harry does look a lot like his grandfather, the Duke of Edinburgh, at the same time, at the same age, and has red hair that his uncle and aunt on his mother's side have." Boy, some of you pay attention to this. I don't doubt that Harry is Charles' son. People have been speculating, Hannah, that the brothers have different fathers.
That's something that I've considered myself.
You think? John, if not for his son, does Harry have an unspoken buyer's remorse? Not exactly sure what that means, but I think I do.
I know what they're saying. You know, would he potentially not have married, or would he be divorcing if they did not have little Archie? And I don't think so. I think that he looks at her with the adoration of a man who's very much in love, and I think that they have shared goals. They have very, very similar interests in helping the world, making it a better place. I was under the belief that it would be the Fab Four, you know, the two brothers and their wives, and now it looks like they're going to be doing it in a different manner.
Well, if what he's doing is getting her and their children away from the tabloids, and
been good for them.
Yeah, and if it doesn't work out, at least they tried. Maybe this will just make it worse because now they'll have two addresses and get double the scrutiny. But I don't blame him for not wanting to put up. And you know, and this idea that, well, you just have to take it. He was born into this. He didn't ask for this.
Didn't, but he had been incredibly accepting of this up until the past, let's say, year. The other thing that was very interesting is they're incredibly dutiful to their grandmother, who has always been a very big part of their life, but definitely after Diana's death. And apparently, I had heard conflicting reports, but the one that seems to be most accurate is that the Queen knew that this release was going to come out, asked them not to, and they did it anyway. And then the Queen countered with a release that said discussions with the Duke and Duchess of Sussex are at a very early stage. And that was just a little bit of a back clap that I love. I love that about the Queen, where she's like, yeah, 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 this isn't over. We're not done yet.
John, would not Harry have money from Diana? You mentioned that the answer is yes. 630, didn't Diana call the press to alert the press on the night that she died? That is, so then she said, hey, here's where we're going, so she could be photographed. I haven't heard that.
I don't know that that's accurate. I don't. It could be, but I don't know that offhand.
Jill, you're on WGN. What was your question? You're on the air.
Oh, yes. I agree with everything you said, Hannah. I was just thinking, you know, Meghan's family seems pretty bad, but I'm wondering if they didn't have a point. Because, like you said, Harry's now estranged from William. Now he's estranged from the royal family. And I think he hasn't seemed happy when you see pictures of him. So do you think there might be some truth in that she's an agitator?
She could be. You know, she could be somebody who's very difficult behind the scenes. It doesn't mean that he's not in love with her, though. And
and they could have a very, very healthy relationship, the two of them, and now the three of them as their small family, is developing. There was a very good feel-good story about them hiking in Vancouver, I think, over the holidays, where they just stopped and helped a couple take a picture while they were hiking. Just another random couple was hiking in the woods, and they took a picture of them. So they do seem to enjoy spending their time together. So I don't think that their relationship is complicated, other than the fact that it's not shaping up to be on a trajectory that they both wanted.
Well, I guess, Jill, thanks for the call. What are you supposed to do? So you're Prince Harry and you're Meghan Markle. You knew it'd be complicated, and now it is complicated, and it sucks, and you don't like it. Mm-hmm. So what are you supposed to live your whole life and raise your kids in that world? Or are you supposed to say, I'm going to do something dramatic to make my life happier? It seems to me all they're doing.
Yeah, there had been widespread rumors that they were going to go and live somewhere in Africa and you know, raise money for different foundations in Africa and help the Queen, you know, spread the goodwill of her life and her outreach. And that would have been possibly an acceptable course. This might be an acceptable course, but it wasn't done in the way the Queen wanted it to be handled. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, independent move for Harry.
More text, 309, maybe the royal family should have gotten 23andMe for Christmas. 773, why not just check their DNA to see if Harry is Charles' son? It's none of our beeswax. For all we know, they know, but we don't know.
They do know possibly. And again, it really doesn't matter. They've had a very, very close brotherly relationship the entire time, fatherly relationship. He's incredibly close with his grandparents. And so what?
Do the sister-in-laws get along, says 773.
Well, that's speculated. And, of course, I can't answer it. I don't know them personally. I have thought in the past that they probably have, you know, the same type of relationship that many of us do, where we very much like each other, we care about each other, we like that, you know, they love our sibling, but they don't necessarily have to be best friends, and they can absolutely have different directives on what, you know, path they want to chart and what mark they want to leave on the world, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they're not supportive of each other.
Hannah, do you know, will they have jobs if they distance themselves from the family? If they move to Toronto, then do they, is he the president of a university? Is she an actress? What do they do then?
Well, that's still up for speculation. They technically would be able to, as long as it didn't conflict with the no longer quote-unquote senior royal duties. They would still have to toe the royal line as granny and then as their, you know, Prince Charles, who will be king, tells them to, because unless they completely abdicate their relationship. But no one really knows. No one's going to tell her not to be an actress, at least, you know, in some productions and helping out. You know, I don't expect her to be doing anything scandalous.
I think I would turn on the Hallmark Channel if she was on a movie just to see what that looks like. I mean, I know she's been in movies I could have seen before, but I think her Q score is pretty high right now. People would be more interested in watching something she was involved in.
Without question. Not a lot of people realize this, but she was one of the girls on Deal or No Deal in the first season or two. So she held a suitcase.
Those girls were gorgeous. That was part
of the... They were lovely. Ladies, please. Yeah, she was one of them.
I did not know that. Oh, that's hilarious. Okay. Any last observation, Hannah? I got 30 seconds.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's just always a pleasure to get to talk with you and the WGN listeners, so thanks for having me on. And hopefully, the next time we get to talk about royal stuff, it's not so salacious.
No, hopefully it is. This is fun. Hannah, it's nice to hear your voice.
You as well. Hannah. Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
We'll record the Mincing Rascals podcast and drop another edition of that this afternoon. It's the award-winning podcast we do with Steve Bertrand, Eric Zorn, and some of our friends here at the Tribune, at WGN Radio, and around town. It's pretty good. I'm not exactly sure what we're going to talk about, but I think the subject of Iraq is going to come up with the gang. Let's walk down the hall now. Jisuke is getting ready for our business lunch. What's coming up with you today?
I sure am. We're going to be talking about the Macy's store closings. Also, Penny Pritzker is back to group with a goal of making Chicago a top-tier city for tech companies. And John, am I right? You don't really love brushing or flossing your teeth, right?
I'm not as diligent about it as I should be.
Okay, well, of course, the Consumer Electronics Show is happening this week in Las Vegas, and they have an electric toothbrush that will shorten your brush time to 10 seconds. I'm thinking that you might be interested in this new gadget.